Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're excited to hear how important the art of feng shui is in the world around us. So we welcome expert Pun Yin to the show. She's dedicated 40 years of her life to feng shui and has worked on projects like the Trump International Hotel and Towers. Indie folk Austin-based band Wild Child stops by, chatting about their new CD, The Runaround, and performing on The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. We end things with author and radio host Dana Wild discussing how to train your brain to enjoy success in life and career.
Capture your need for sound.
Several years ago, it was all the rage to talk about the art of feng shui and getting things in your life organized, so essentially you would be more in flow. I don't know about you, but I haven't heard a lot of talk of it lately, so we thought it would be great to speak with feng shui expert Pun Yin to see if this art form is still relevant in the world around us. Pun Yin has dedicated 40 years of her life to feng shui and has worked on such projects as the Trump International Hotel and Towers and the revitalization project of Times Square. Pun Yin, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
My pleasure.
So before we start, I wanted to ask you how you actually got your start in feng shui.
Well, I was fortunate enough to be born into the family. My mentor and father, Ma Sitting Sun, is the world-renowned figure and doing this for 60-somewhat years now. So I had a head start helping him with his practice when I was a teenager for 15 years before I was allowed to practice on my own. So before I know it, it's 40 years in the business.
And can you explain to, you know, us people who might not really be familiar with feng shui, can you explain sort of briefly what the art form is about and how it can actually help people in their daily lives?
An authentic feng shui experience is one that the master balances not only what you see as the visual feng shui, but the feng shui in your mind. And that is the ultimate experience of shifting the energy, because in a space, we have the energy vibration that is created by the structural as well as what is in our mind and our personality that radiates and interacts with each other. So an authentic feng shui experience using the classical form, we take the Chinese astrology profile, which is the birth, year, month, date, and time, to figure out the five elements composition. And then we go about balancing the representations of the five elements through colors, directions, theme of artwork and textures in the space, and then also the directions that the person can feel balanced, and then we give customized recommendations for the person to be at his and her best.
And do you find that a lot of people are receptive to feng shui, or do you find a lot of people are hesitant to bring it into their lives?
25 years ago in the West, there was only about a few percent of the population knew about feng shui. Now, you know, it's around 90%. So a lot of people from all walks of life and different cultures are embracing it because they've seen the result from a lot of the people using it. And the classical forms that I use is using natures, like plants, water fountains, and colors and artwork that is very subtle, that blends with the design taste.
Now, can you explain to us, because I was reading some information from my producer, and she had mentioned that you wanted to mention about the five elements composition. What does that really involve?
Okay, so the customized solution to feng shui is one that is taking the birthday, year, month, day, and time to figure out your own five elements composition. And each of the element is represented by particular colors, directions, themes of artwork and textures. So we use, let's say, for example, you're missing the fire energy. My recommendation to you is to adapt the south direction that represents fire, and then to use more warm colors in your environment and your wardrobes, even color car you drive, such like color red, in interior colors like lavender, pink, purple, all those that represents fire energy to strengthen your yang qi. Therefore, you'll be more proactive and more commanding in the workplace and in your relationship. So it's balancing yin-yang and the five elements. It's really the soul and the essence of what feng shui is about, and therefore no books and classes could be able to give a generalized concept for someone to really make the ultimate shift.
What areas do you suggest first to start incorporating feng shui into a person's life?
In general, everyone should know their own five elements composition, because this is the base. And by knowing it, you know what to bring into your clothes, your interior colors at work, place, and home. So knowing that is the basic. And then have a session with an authentic master that can help you to know your own levels of energy in this and the coming cycles, so you can make decisions that's either proactive or not, and so that you can have more smoother journey going forward.
Joining us on the show is feng shui expert Pun Yin, who's been working in the art form for 40 years. You can learn more about her on her website, punyin.com, and that is punyin.com. I wanted to ask you about the workplace. Like, if you want to do feng shui in your office, is it important that the entire office floor be sort of following feng shui as well, or can you really just protect your own office space, whether you're in a cubicle or in an actual office?
Even a small cubicle could, through colors and objects that have certain vibration, to improve the cubicles. And so, you know, no matter what is the size, there's still ways that could customize to the person's need.
And is it important to start your feng shui process, you know, at the office, or do you start at home? Like, where is the first place that you would suggest that a person gets their feet wet?
Actually, both important. If, let's say, 50% of your time is spent in the office, 50% at home, you know, and that creates the whole you and how you feel from day to day. So it's equally important.
And, you know, I wanted to get your take on schools. Is it important maybe that you know, people that are involved in education implement feng shui in not only elementary and high school, but also maybe in college and universities for our young people?
Well, definitely, because we are the product of our environment. And for that reason, many of my clients are government agencies, hospitals, and public places like banks, commercial places, because everybody are coming to be aware of the energy factor that is affecting us. So especially in school system, that when our children will be our future, they should be in a healthy environment that support their energy level.
Have you noticed, Pun Yin, that, you know, not only North America is embracing this art form, but other places around the world? Like, is North America catching up to, let's say, Asia?
Well, Asia has been an art that has evolved for about 5,000 years. And in the West, in the early 90s, when many of the companies advocated on feng shui and their improvement and success, the media have followed closely, that most of them were my clients, you know, either myself or my father, Master Tin Sun. So that has really gained the validations that it is an art that's timeless and universal. So that's why the West, since observing all my track records in the 30 years spent, have realized that feng shui is something that everyone can benefit from, you know, no matter where they are in the world and what kind of business they are in.
Have you noticed that feng shui has or continues to grow? Because I mentioned off the top, I remember hearing about it so much several years ago. Like, every second word was, you know, something to do with feng shui. And then I kind of noticed that it sort of slipped out of my consciousness. And just I didn't really see it very much being mentioned in articles or TV shows. Is it still growing? And is it something that a lot of people still want to be a part of and learn about?
Well, actually, you know, a lot of people wanted to get into the business. So that's why every year I receive like hundreds of calls wanting to be the apprentice of myself and my dad. And then there are many, you know, quick fix version books and classes out there that turns people into certified feng shui practitioner in a few days of lessons. But many of my clients are highly educated and meet of different industries. So they said, why would I go to an Irish pub for tea or dim sum experience? So that they rather, you know, keep on searching until they find a Chinese feng shui master that uses the classical form. And also, track record is important for people searching for feng shui solutions and advisors. that really should have authentic trainings and have enough apprenticeship, such like doctor doing interns, few experiences, and you know, and them having the reputation that will stick around to help, you know, the client is important. So you know, it's better to look for the track records versus just someone that's, you know, that's just commercialized out there.
Before I let you go, Punyin, what do you want people to know about feng shui, you know, to either get their feet wet or even just to get interested in seeing that it might actually help them?
To start with getting a five elements reading from a real master who can talk about your personalities from just the chart, and then give you some recommendations how to bring into your space and your wardrobe that you can start feeling the energy change. And then eventually, you know, invest in into a real feng shui consultation of your space. And then my clients would go further by knowing the elements of the people, you know, they are surrounding by, and then also for all kinds of business and personal life advice. So a feng shui master is not just about moving this thing here and that, you know, to shift, to hope for better result. You have to really get into the head of your feng shui energy, that is from your personality, the cycle of high and low of yourself right now, how to give you the hope and clear direction to go forward. And that is a very serious investment, and therefore people should be very, very careful of knowing the track records and the training of the masters before they invest even a dime in it.
Punyin, thank you so much for this. It's been so fascinating to speak with you today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure, and enjoy.
That is feng shui expert Punyin, again, who's been working in the art form for 40 years. Make sure to check out her website, punyin.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We're happy to welcome to the show an indie folk powerhouse band from Austin, Texas, called Wild Child. The group is steadily climbing their career with their latest album, The Runaround, and recently performed on The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. Joining us on the show right now is one of their lead singers, Alexander Beggins. Alexander, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Well, it's great to be on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Awesome. You and I were both discussing off-air how much we like each other's names, so it works out really well.
It does. It works out.
So I wanted to ask you right off the top, you know, we have a lot of people listening to the show actually from overseas in Australia and Europe and Japan. You know, for people who might not know of you yet, how did the group actually come together and why the name Wild Child?
Okay, so let's see, 2010, I'm graduating college down here in Texas, and I get an opportunity to play accordion for a band from Denmark, from Copenhagen, called The Migrant. And so I was hired to be the accordion player, and Kelsey, who I did not know at the time, was hired to be the violinist. And so it was about 8 weeks we were going to be on the road, and we met about a week before the tour started. Got to know each other, rehearsed the songs to The Migrant. And a couple weeks into the tour, you know, there was a ukulele just kind of floating around the van, just so portable and small. You know, I started kind of riffing around on it and just kind of became a thing that Kelsey and I would do. So we just started writing songs and, with, you know, with no intention of becoming a band of our own. Kind of having fun writing. And we were at a park one day. We had a day off tour, and someone took a picture of us out in the woods, and it just looked so bandy. And we're like, if we ever have a band, let's call ourselves Wild Child. So that's where that came from. You know, we started writing, and we were like, you know, these songs are pretty good. Like, once we get home, let's try and record an album. And still, at the same point, we weren't really, you know, trying to make this anything more of like, well, we wrote these songs on the road, let's go back and record them. So we went back and we rented out this dilapidated house, got a bunch of studio gear, and got our friends and family together and made this album. And then when it came out, it actually did pretty well. And I guess that's what I'm talking to you today.
Awesome. And I'm so intrigued by the fact that you, you guys are from Austin, Texas, and we all know, I think, if you're in the music scene, that Austin has its very own vibrant music scene going on, a lot of great groups and artists coming out of there. Do you think Austin has really shaped who you are as a band? Has it played like almost like an extra member?
Absolutely. And you know what's so great about Austin is it's so supportive. You know, taking the band to the next level. So when you're a baby band, there's clubs all over town that you can play at ease. And then, you know, you can move up to the next venue, the next size, and then there's bigger ones than that, and then there's festivals. And, yeah, everyone's trying to help you get to a better place in your career, because it's the entire town is so focused on music that, you know, it's not like a little tiny secret about bands. Like, bands are going to get bigger from Austin. There's just so many of them. And so, yeah, I mean, like, our local radio station, you know, has been playing us since the very beginning and always trying to help us along the way. And, you know, I don't think we would have made it as far as we have in any other city, for sure.
I've read, you know, some articles about you guys and even just, you know, some of the descriptions that I've read have been like indie pop, indie, you know, power pop, indie folk pop, like pop, and indie obviously being the big word there. But I want to know, I'm always interested, you know, when I meet bands, when I talk to bands, it's one thing to sort of read how they are being described by other people, but how do you describe Wild Child?
So two things. One, writing for us is kind of an outlet for what we're feeling and our emotions. So our lyrics are very close to home, and like we mean everything we write. And so that's kind of for us, and we like to think that that's for us. But our live show, you know, we want to have a good time. We want our crowd to have fun, because that's what it's all about, you know. And we never try and look too cool or like we're like a bigger deal than we are. We're just a bunch of kids that like playing music, and you know. So, you know, pop music kind of has that thing where, you know, it's catchy and it's a good time. So, and the fact that we have a guy and girl singing back and forth about love songs is one dimension, and the fact that it's led by a ukulele, it's just kind of poppy in itself. But I don't know, we coined a term when we were recording the Runaround. We called it Alohop, Hawaiian hip hop.
I like it.
And so, you know, I don't really know. It's always such a strange question trying to classify your own music, but you know, Alohop, I guess, is what we'll say.
Awesome. Now, who do you admire musically, and has their influence crept into your sound? Now, I obviously know that Kelsey's a big part of this as well, but has someone sort of really sort of, you know, infringed upon what you're doing?
Yeah, and that's what's so, I think, one thing that makes us very eclectic is that Kelsey listens to, you know, only old music. She's a huge Aretha Franklin fan. She knows every song from before 1960, you know. And I like to keep myself relevant with newer bands. I'm like a huge Dr. Dog fan. I think Vampire Weekend's doing some really cool stuff right now. So we kind of can mesh these two hugely different directional influences. And then we kind of make our own sound. And then, you know, like our drummer used to play in a hip hop band for a long time. And, yeah, there's seven of us, and so when we get together and write, we all have different ideas, and sometimes it's a headache trying to get anything on paper. But I think that's something that makes us special, because we're able to, we do listen to different things, and not one of us listens to the same thing. So we get to pull from different places, and I think it really helps out our style.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Alexander Beggins, one of the lead vocalists from the band Wild Child. Make sure to check out their website, wildchildsounds.com. Alexander, can you describe your latest album, The Runaround? Is there, how should I put it, like an overall message, a theme to the CD that you want fans to take away from it? And what was the recording process like?
All right, so our first album, Pillow Talk, Kelsey and I, we kind of decided to be touring musicians. We kind of came from the same place. We had both just gotten out of our first long-term relationships of, you know, 4 and 5 years for each of us, right about the exact same time. And it was like, I want to go on the road. I've always wanted to play music professionally. I'm just going to go do it. So that's how we started out on the road together. Consequently, a lot of our songs were dealing with that, whatever emotional headspace we had from getting out of these long-term relationships. And so that was 2010. When we went to write our new album, we learned a couple things, and we were kind of in a different spot. You know, we were back on the dating game. We were trying to have relationships living on the road, which is very hard to do. So, you know, it was all things that we were dealing with at the time. And And then as far as sonically, we wanted to, you know, we wanted to take our folk duo and try and see how far we can push it. And so we went into the studio, and we got a call from this guy, Ben Queller, who's a Texas legend musician down here. Left us a voicemail and was like, I'd love to throw my name in the hat to be the producer on the album. And I'm sure you got a bunch of people lined up for it. And then Telson and I looked at each other and we don't have anyone lined up at all. We didn't even know where we're gonna do it or how we're gonna pay for it. And we were huge Ben Queller fans growing up as kids, so it was really cool to work with them. And we raised our money through a Kickstarter, which people have things to say, they like it or they don't, but you know, it worked out for us and we were able to raise money. And we went into this really nice, expensive, fancy studio for the first time, and we just got to play around for about a month, and you know, and the Runaround came out.
And how did you decide to go with Crazy Bird as the lead single? What is the sort of thinking behind that?
We, you know, we've made a couple records, and there always seems to be a song that sticks out as the single. And I think, for me anyways, I think that it's not my favorite song on the album, but I think it can cast the largest net to get people to listen to our music. And so I think Crazy Bird was just kind of the no-brainer. It's, you know, it had radio potential, which you always try and, you always want to at least have a song on your record that you think can reach a lot of people on the radio. And that was the one, and we kind of ran with it.
What do you think sets you apart from other bands that are in your genre of music?
I think one thing, our live show right now, we just, you know, have you ever like gone to a concert and you look up, and especially younger bands like that are similar to us and growing up with us. One thing Kelsey and I have always talked about is how much we hate when a band is trying too hard. Or you can tell that they're trying to look cool, or they're trying to project some image of themselves that's not them. We're very true to ourselves. You know, we like to giggle and laugh on stage, and we rarely ever write a set list, and we kind of just go with it, and we like to interact with the crowd. And, you know, one of the highest compliments we ever get paid is, like, it looks like you guys are having so much fun out there, and it made my heart happy. I wanted to be a part of it, and I felt like I was part of it, and we were all doing it together. And I think that, you know, we're on the road like 170 days this year or something. You know, staying out on the road, and you get to experience a lot of different crowds and meet a lot of different people. And I think that it's infectious. Sometimes the way that we can kind of have a show together with our audience. And I think that's starting to set us apart.
When it comes to writing, you know, I've interviewed a fair amount of bands, and I always find it interesting to find out if they like to write on the road, or they like to maybe collect ideas when they're on the road, but then they have to write at home. So where do you guys sit with that?
We love writing on the road. And one reason is because we can, just because, you know, I could play the ukulele in the van all day and no one can really hear it. So quiet. Yeah. You know, I don't need any amps or anything like that. And I feel like I need an outlet on the road doing something creative. As fun as shows are, like, I still feel like I need to be writing and doing something creative on the road, or else I'd go crazy. And I think Kelsey feels the same way. So whenever we get, you know, there's so much time in this business of just waiting around. You know, you get to the venue at 2 or 3 o'clock, and then you wait around for sound check, and then you wait around after sound check the show, then after the show you have to wait around. Then you get up, drive all day, and wait around all day. So there's so much time to write, and we like to utilize that time.
What did it feel like being on The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson? Was that like a huge sort of coup for you guys to make it on national television?
Absolutely. I mean, it's such a stepping stone in every artist's career to be on TV, especially a late night show. It was surreal. It was, you know, we had all watched the show, obviously. You know, it was just so much fun, like, at the end of the day. And, you know, wasn't nervous all day long until, like, right when he came up to us right before the commercial break while we're getting on stage, and he's like, "Hey, Craig, you're on TV, so don't screw up." And we're like, "What?" Yeah, he's a funny guy, and he's like, "Seriously, don't screw up, but, you know, don't do it." So we're like, "Okay." And then, you know, he went and played, and everything was fine, but it was pretty nerve-wracking. And, you know, we just did the CBS This Morning Show a couple of weeks ago in New York, and way less nervous for that one. So I'm glad that we got the first one out of the way. That's the hardest one to do, and then hopefully there's a lot more coming.
This seems like a silly question, but I just kind of want your answer anyways. Would it be really awesome for you guys to make it on SNL?
Of course. Yeah. I think, you know, like, there's a lot of big personalities in advance, and, you know, I think that, I don't know, that's the one that I would want to do, and we all want to do Conan really bad, too.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I think you guys would fit in very well with him. That would be really cool. And before I let you bounce, Alexander, what can we expect to see from the band, you know, in the next little while? Obviously, the album's sort of recent, so I know you're pushing that. But what can we expect from you guys in the next, like, you know, year to 18 months or so?
Yeah, well, we are prolific writers, and we're about halfway done with the album right now, our third album. And we're going to finish it in September for an early 2015 release. So we're moving to Savannah, Georgia in September. We fell in love with this studio called Dollhouse Productions. We fell in love with the producers, Peter and David, and we loved the town, and we stopped there on tour and did a session. And we were like, we're going to come back here, and we're going to make our album here. And so we're down there right now. We're doing it all analog, just 24 tracks to tape. And it's coming along really great. So we're going to finish that up. And then in October, we're going over to Europe for the first time. We're going to be there for about 5 weeks. And then a little bit of R&R time, then release the next record early next year and stay on the road.
Awesome. Alexander, it's been
Conan O'Brien.
That's amazing. Well, I hope you guys make it there. I hope you guys make it on SNL. And thank you so much for spending time with us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
That's Alexander Beggins again, one of the lead vocalists of the band Wild Child. You need to check out their website, learn all about them, wildchildsounds.com.
Hey, this is Alexander Beggins from the band Wild Child. I'm hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show.
I'll wait around for days, this porch on which I pace, 'cause I need your mind, I need yours.
Thank you.
you get frustrated with yourself and with your life when you work hard at trying to achieve career success and things just aren't working out? We've asked author, radio host, brain trainer, and founder of the Mind Aware Company, Dana Wild, to join us to give us tips and advice on how to turn things around so you can enjoy the success you've always wanted in both life and career. Dana, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
So, Dana, can you actually explain the concept behind your train your brain techniques and how you, you know, managed to use this idea to bring success to yourself? From what I understand, you know, from humble beginnings, if you will, to over $1 million in sales in less than 19 months.
Right. If you can think about the brain, that you have a little matchmaker that lives in your head, and the matchmaker is called the reticular activating system. And that little matchmaker spends all day, every day, standing at attention like your best friend, waiting to match up whatever you're talking about and whatever you're thinking about. And that's the easiest explanation I can give you. And I think what happens in North America is that we get to be, maybe all over the world, kind of lazy thinkers. You know, we take a lot of care in what we eat and how we dress, all these other things in our lives, but we don't take a lot of care in the thoughts that go through our heads and the things we talk about.
Why are some people capable of, you know, breaching plateaus and others seem, you know, to get stuck and don't know how to get out of the rut that they might be in?
Well, the easiest answer I can give you, one of the reasons I named my company The Mind Aware, is because when it comes right down to it, that's really where everything starts when it comes to change or making dramatic change in your life. And it doesn't really matter whether you're doing something physical like an exercise program or whether you're building a business or whatever. You have to start with that awareness that, okay, these are the results I'm getting. This is why I'm getting these results. I'm becoming aware, you know, in our case, we teach to become more aware of your thoughts, become more aware of what you're speaking about, and then make that decision to change, make the decision to turn around. So the people who start seeing dramatic changes in their lives, they do that because they step up.
Can you sort of let us know how you go about creating change in your brain, which would then result in positive results? Like, can you give us an example of, I don't know, is it someone that even writes maybe negatively about something, or if someone's like, how are you doing? And it's a negative response. Like, how do you know that you might be on the wrong path, and how do you go about changing that around?
Yeah, great question, Kelly. It's so simple. It's just crazy. When you think about it, if you think of everything based around this idea that the reticular activating system is matching up what you think and what you talk about. If you start the step one, if you can start getting more aware and start paying attention to what you're thinking and what you're talking about, you're going to start to see that, oh my gosh, I'm getting these results. Everything matches up. We like to say the outside picture matches the inside picture. And if you can become aware of it and make a decision to change, that's the key thing. Now, here's the challenge. I know sometimes people have a challenging time. We recommend mantras. People have tried affirmations or incantations, all these kinds of things. Positive thinking movement has professed. But I know sometimes people have a challenge with that because, you know, if you're not abundant, to walk around being, I'm abundant, you just feel silly. You know, it's like back in the days of Saturday Night Live with Stuart Smalley. Some people of the right age will remember that guy, who would walk around saying, I'm good enough, I'm strong enough, and doggone it, people like me. So what we do with Train Your Brain is we teach people how to start talking in more positive ways where you don't feel like you're lying to yourself. And I can give you an example of that if you like.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
So we worked with a gentleman for a long time who was a filmmaker, and he was shy, been shy his entire life. And so he would go to networking events and he would try to talk to people about his project, and the outside picture would match the inside picture, and his palms would start to sweat, and he'd get nervous and he'd get tongue-tied, because your brain, your reticular activating system, always matches up whatever ideas you have about yourself and the world around you. So he would leave these events, and this is where the real challenge is for people. The actual thing that happens to us is not such a big deal, but when you leave the event and then most of us beat ourselves up, and he would too. I'm so stupid. Why can't I speak? I hate being shy. I'm never going to get this project made. Well, that's like having that incident happen 1,000 times over, your brain doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's imagined. And you just keep reliving it, and keep reinforcing that same picture over and over and over again. We call this the cycle of perpetual sameness. And this is why most people only see incremental change. We have a bad experience. We beat ourselves up about it. We work up all this emotion. We reinforce the bad experience and the bad image. It matches up again. Round and round it goes. So he knew he had to make a shift, you know, but he's been shy his whole life. He's not going to start walking around saying, I'm an extrovert. I mean, it's just ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. So what we did is we gave him one of our techniques we call transitory statements. And we have 20 mindware experiments in the book, and this is one example. Transitory statements can be implemented a lot of different ways, but the way he used it was he used that powerful word, but. But negates everything that comes before it. So he started saying things like, I'm shy, but I hook up with all the right people. I'm shy, but I'm meeting just the right people for my project. I'm shy, but people like my style. I'm shy, but my project's still getting made. I'm shy, but things are happening for me. I'm shy, but everything's going my way. So he could keep his image of being shy, but it was no longer a stopper. And so, of course, what happened, you know, end of the story, of course, is that he's out making his project. Things are going great. But I think this is a way, you know, people have things that they consider very deep-seated, like being procrastinators or disorganized or, you know, all of these things that we put stoppers on ourselves, not eating right and so on. So if you use that word but in the appropriate way, you can start reinforcing positive things, you know, and disorganized people do it all the time. They have these messy desks and they go, yeah, I know it's messy, but I always know where everything is, right? So we do it. We just have to start doing it consciously.
Do you do that for both career and personal life, you know, Dana? Like, can you use it for either or? Like, let's say you've fallen in love with someone and it's not working or whatever, and you're sort of obsessing about it. Like, can you get yourself out of that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have people, we were in the business niche and are in the business niche. And so people would, you know, get the book to grow their businesses. And then what would happen is they'd start using it to improve their kid's soccer game, or they'd start using it to lose weight. We have several people who've lost, you know, 60, 80, 100 pounds using train your brain techniques. And in the case of, let's say you're down about a relationship, or frankly, let's say, think about people who are in successful relationships. Does that mean that they're with a perfect partner? No. Reality is they're probably with somebody who has character flaws or character defects, and they may say things about them similar to the example I just gave. They may be saying things about him or her like, yeah, I know he's messy or he doesn't pick up after himself, but he takes great care of our family. You know, I know. And so we do this. This is how we end up in these situations where we're happy or we're in love. But there are ways in situations where we're not happy and we're not getting the results we want that we can start to use it more consciously. Does that make sense, Kelly?
Yeah. Because I know, you know, that seems to take over a lot of people's lives occasionally, you know, if things aren't going well on the home front. And then I would assume it affects your career as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So the basic premise, you know, when you go to positive thinking motivational seminars, people will always use these phrases like what you focus on grows, or you bring about what you think about, and all of this great stuff, which all happens to be true. But what we found was nobody was explaining why. Why is it that what you focus on grows? Why is it that what you think about, you bring about? Well, the reason is it's specifically because of this reticular activating system. When you are focused on something, your brain has, I think of it like a little matchmaker, like your own little personal assistant in your head goes, check, I understand you're focused on this negative thing that you hate about your partner or you hate about your job. So I understand that you want more of that. I got it. Message loud and clear. And it filters through the billions and billions of bits of information that are coming at us every single second of every day and matches that up for us.
Is that why you would then be like, let's say you've had a bad day at work or a bad, you know, let's say it's a bad 2 weeks where you're not sure if you want to stay at this job or whatever. Like, is that why you obsess about it, like, quote unquote?
Well, and exactly, obsess about it. One of the tools we use in the book is we talk about the emotional scale, but the general concept is when you're in an emotion, like you're frustrated or you're angry or you're depressed or you're fearful, it's really challenging to access those emotions that are what we would consider on the other end of the emotional scale, like bliss and appreciation and happy. So, you know, you're feeling fearful and some little perky positive thinker comes up and says, oh, you bring about what you think about. You know, they don't make you happy. They make you angry, right? Because it's so much easier to access those emotions on kind of that end of the scale, on the end of the scale that's more negative. And so what we give in the book are we give techniques about how to kind of ease yourself up that scale so you get feeling better and better. So it's kind of that proverbial thing of, you know, the guy who wakes up in the morning, he stubs his toe on the bed and then he has a bad rest of the day. Well, at some point, we have to start being active participants in our own life, and we have to start being navigators of our own life. And the way we do that is through awareness of our thoughts and awareness of our emotions. And then we can start to not let those silly little things set off our whole day or week.
Dana, is the process of being grateful, does that help you sort of get out of like negative zones? Because I feel like that's a really powerful tool. Like if you, you know, let's say, like even for example, myself the other day, I ended up scratching my car on a road sign because it was either hit the road sign or hit another car. So, you know, I ended up with like probably about $500 worth of damage. And normally, like in the past, that would have stuck with me for like several days. I would have been rip-roaring mad at myself, the whole nine yards. But in the last year, I've worked really hard at trying to be grateful for, you know, for just breathing properly. So I was able to sort of use that and be like, you know what? You could have actually been in a car accident. It could have been much worse. Like, you should be grateful. And so I didn't even obsess about it at all. It sort of just was, it was a hindrance. It was annoying, but I didn't focus on it. Is being grateful, does that help quite a bit?
Yeah, excellent, excellent technique. I love that. And it's a great way. You know, contrary to popular belief, the brain can only think one thought at a time. And I know that's hard to believe because sometimes it's like, really, there's so much noise going on in my head. It's got to be more than one thought. But really, you can only think one thought at a time. So the time that you are consciously turning yourself around and making an intention to think something grateful and to say, okay, what's good about this situation? How can I feel better about this? That's time that you're not spent generating a bunch of negative emotion in your body. So it's an excellent technique, and it's a great way to go about it.
Joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show is author, radio host, brain trainer, and founder of the Mind Aware company, Dana Wild. Learn more about her on her website, danawild.biz. Can you explain the combination of mindset and action and what that actually brings about?
Yeah, we call it intentional action. And it came about because a lot of people talk about inspired action. And I would be like, well, I'm taking an action now. How do I know if it's inspired? You know, I feel like doing it, but I'm not sure. And so we talk about intentional action. If you want things to happen faster for you, you want things to happen better, you want things to be easier, you want your life to be more effortless, get yourself in a good, positive mindset first. Get yourself fired up. Listen to some good music. Say good things to yourself. Say positive things. Then take your action. Then what you're doing, it's gonna happen effortlessly. What you're going to do is get better results. And you're not going to be doing that thing of, oh, I have to go out and make it happen today. That never works.
I wanted to ask as well, you know, for I think people who have small businesses or thinking about a small business and even, you know, maybe have a small business and want to take it to the next level, especially if you are, you know, in a small business, usually you're doing, you know, 97 jobs by yourself because you can't pay anyone yet or what have you. And let's say that you are particularly good in a certain area of the job. But like, let's say, for example, we'll even use me again, like with the show that I do here. You know, I would love to just be the creative person and come up with the interview ideas and all that kind of stuff. But there's the other side of it that has to be the business-minded person to get, you know, the word of the show out and all that kind of stuff. How do you bridge that gap if, you know, you want to be successful, you want to get going further, but like one side of it is not really who you are? How do you make it happen?
Yeah, I get what you're asking. You know, first of all, obviously, and I think you agree with this, I can tell from your style that as much as you can throughout your life, it's always a great idea to act within your natural gifts and try to do the things that, you know, seem effortless for you anyway. Like, you're obviously a good interviewer. This is a, you know, the creative stuff is your natural gifts. And as much as you can do that, great. Outsource what you can. But you're right. Sometimes you can't outsource things. And sometimes you just are in a situation where this is something that has to be done by me. And it's not necessarily my greatest gift. So I'll give you a personal example. I'm not necessarily a natural writer. That's not my thing where I go, oh, I just can't wait. You know, like some people are just like that. They just love to sit down and start writing. Well, that's not me. And I know there are things I could do. I could talk into a recorder. I could do this. But sometimes you just have to sit down. And you have to write something. So what I do and what we recommend for our people is for those things that aren't in your natural gift set, get yourself in a good fired up mood ahead of time before you sit down to do it. And I'm talking 3 to 5 minutes of preparation intention before you do it. Set a timer. So not for the 3 to 5 minutes, but for the length of time you're going to do it. So if I'm going to write, I'm going to write for 30 minutes. Here's my timer. And the first 2 or 3 minutes up to 5 is spent thinking about, why am I doing this? Well, I'm doing this because I can't wait for people to read these ideas I have. And we're looking for a traditional publisher. And so I'm really excited. I love the idea of 2 or 3 publishers fighting over my book. You know, I am so glad that I get to do this. Isn't it so neat that I get to be self-employed? And I love that my ideas are going to come on the page. And think about all those things that are positive and why you love to do it. Because you know what? When you start coming from that place, now you sit down, that 30 minutes just goes like that. Usually most of the time I keep writing longer, and you probably will surprise yourself and keep doing bookkeeping longer. Mm-hmm. Yep. Because what happens is you're so fired up, it's almost like you can't hold yourself back from doing it at that point. I hope that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know, like, it just seems, again, for small business people, I have a friend of mine that they started up a cake baking business, and it's, you know, it's going gangbusters now. And I think it did help that it was sort of like a partnership between him and his wife. But obviously, like, I'm sure they would rather spend their time in the kitchen baking and coming up with all these creative, you know, cake fillings and all that sort of stuff. But like, you know, they had to work on their social media. They have to get the word out that the company's there and all that sort of stuff. So I know it's obviously very hard when it's just on your shoulders and you're trying to get it to the next level. And sometimes I know, because from personal experience, you feel like you're in a rut and you don't know how to get over that hump.
Well, and here's the thing, Kellyanne, that I would give your listeners is always remember that every experience you have in your life, however you choose to experience it, is up to you. You know, this idea, there's been past ideas that, you know, it's almost like negative emotions or something that happened to you. And there's this big thing in the media about, oh, your brain is sabotaging you. And there's all this kind of real hype. It's almost like brain as mugger. You know, our emotions as mugger, like they just jump out from behind a tree and oh, boom, now, you know, here I am. But the reality is you're going to do those things. The choice is whether you do them with a drudgery or whether you do them with joy in your heart. And it's really up to you. You have total control over it. Every minute of your day, the more you can stay aware, the more things happen, the more minutes of your day are spent this way. And it's not like you never get angry about anything. I daily have some technology thing that makes me angry. But what happens is you turn it around faster, you catch it faster, you laugh more, you know, you have a better life and you have better results because of it.
What does it actually mean to think positive? Because like you even mentioned before, so many people bandy about be positive, do this, be that. Like, what do you want people to really do when you say think positive?
When I use the term think positive, what I mean is try to think of a thought or think of something, move yourself emotionally to a place that feels just a little bit better. And when we talk about the emotional scale in the book, a lot of times what we're talking about is just being more hopeful. You know, it's really hard to be certain and clear about every little thing in your life and just walk around like a robot, some kind of blissed out person. I don't advocate that. I advocate embracing all your emotions and just eking yourself up feeling a little bit better. And so we rely a lot on hope. You know, most business owners, they stay stuck in that level of frustration and overwhelm and stress. And right next over on the emotional scale is hope. And so if you can just be aware, like, okay, do I want to operate from a level of stress or do I want to operate from a level of hope? Okay, I hope I feel better. I hope things get easier. I hope I find a method for me. I hope I'm able to outsource this soon. I hope things go better. I hope I feel better. I hope I'm able to outsource this soon. You know, just give yourself those 7-8 hope sentences to kind of ease yourself up and get a little bit more light. So just that sense of relief. I hope that's clear.
Do you ever worry, though, that people have false senses of hope? Like, you know, where they would be like, you know, I hope I'm going to bring in $5 million next year. And then they do something negative where they're spending too much that they don't even have, hoping that, oh, it's going to work out. Like, is there a line or a boundary you have to be careful of?
Well, I think when you get in tune with really what your real emotions are, you understand, you can say whatever words you want to, but the question really is, what are you really actually feeling in your body?
Okay.
So it's just like that person who says, I'm not angry.
Right.
Well, you know, they can say whatever they want to, but you can feel every vibe in their body screaming out how angry they are. And I think that's what often happens, how people use hope. They really think they're using the word hope, but that what they're really using is the word wish, right?
Right.
And so that's really what the work is. That's what we teach people with Train Your Brain, is we teach people how to get really clear, how to really understand the difference between their thoughts, their emotions, how they work together, so that you really are able to generate that true lightness and carefree attitude inside of you anytime you want. There's not this kind of fake grasping and grabbing on. It's really, really easy. It's so simple. I almost feel silly talking about it half the time.
And before I let you go, I wanted to ask, you know, can anyone sort of adopt these techniques and see success in a short amount of time? Because I know, you know, I'm sure you've seen this obviously throughout your career, and just even as a person probably watching television or what have you, where, you know, there's these ideas all the time of you know, do this, do that, and your life's going to get better. But can you actually see success in a short amount of time instead of investing? Obviously, you need to invest in yourself for years with these techniques, I would imagine. But can you actually see a short turnaround to keep you sort of positive and heading in the right direction?
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is the part that continually blows me away even now, is that, you know, if you think about it, if you've been going through your life unconsciously or kind of, you know, asleep, not really paying attention to this stuff, maybe having negative thoughts a good portion of the day, when you start to apply even a little bit of this, you start to see really rapid change. And so what I would challenge you, and this is the fun part for me, is that I never have to convince anybody of what I'm saying, because your own brain will convince you. So I would challenge everybody who's listening to this, find a sentence that feels good for you. And it doesn't have to be something extreme like I'm a money magnet or abundance is flowing to me in great quantities. It can be something really simple like everything's going my way or things are getting better. Things are getting better and better. That's one of my favorites. Things are getting better and better and better. Things are getting better and better. Life is getting easier. I'm learning more. Things are getting better. Find a sentence that makes you happy like that, starting right now, hearing this right now. And just start to say it 50 to 100 times a day, whenever you think about it, loading the dishwasher, brushing your teeth, just start to say it in the background. Put a few signs up if it helps you remember it, or reminders on your phone. And then watch what happens. Literally within 2-3 days, start to see what happens. Because what's happening is you are giving that message to your reticular activating system mm-hmm. over and over and over again. And your reticular activating system is, let me just show you all the ways that things are getting better and better.
And I know I said that was last question. I do have one, though, that just popped up because of what you said. Obviously, I think, you know, thinking positive, and like you said, you know, things are getting better and better. I think that's a really great way to be. Do you ever, though, as a human, like a human being, if the negative thoughts come a little bit, like you're tired or, you know, it has been a bad day, do you let those out, though, just so that you've acknowledged them and let them out so that they're not building up underneath the surface somewhere, and then sort of return to trying to be, you know, better and better?
That's what our whole practice of moving up the emotional scale is all about in the book. And what we do is there's actually a really calculated, easy way you can let those out and move up the scale one at a time. Briefly, imagine if you're fearful. What happens is you let out those fearful emotions for less than 60 seconds. You know, I'm worried. Here's what I'm worried about. I'm fearful. Here's what I'm fearful about. Then the next level on the scale is angry. And so now just start saying a few angry sentences, again, for less than 60 seconds. Then next is frustration. I'll start saying a few frustrated sentences. And then next thing you know, in under 3 minutes, you're up to hope and above. Okay. You just quit trying to go from fear and worry to, you know, believing and knowing and loving. You know, you quit trying to make those big jumps. You just let those feelings out, embrace those. Because here's the deal, and I hope I'm not taking too long, but the bottom line is your negative emotions are also your friends. because your negative emotions are letting you know, okay, this is not where I want to be. Something's off here. Maybe I am tired. Maybe I need to eat something, you know, but something's not right. And thank you. Bless your negative emotions for indicating that. Just like when you touch a hot stove, you're happy for that pain. Be happy for the other pain too.
Okay. Perfect. Dana, you've been amazing. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Dana Wild. Again, make sure to learn all about her. She's, a radio host, a brain trainer, founder of the Mind Aware Company. You can learn more about her on her website, danawild.biz.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for spending time with us on the show this week. We always appreciate your time. A big shout out to our guests, including Punyin, Wild Child, and Dana Wild. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Sister Mary Loretta. To be successful, the first thing to do is fall in love with your work. As always, you can join us on social media, on Twitter, at K Alexander Show, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, and of course, our YouTube channel with our interviews, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. Have an amazing week. You and I'll chat soon.